Nobody does it better than Regent Seven Seas Cruises. Enjoy all-inclusive, unrivaled luxury with unlimited shore excursions, indulgent cuisine, personalized service, and more aboard spacious all-suite ships. Visit rssc.com to experience the unrivaled.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details. Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Memorial Day Sale and get 30% off paints and stains May 15th through the 28th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
Picture a dark room. A few thousand people, most of them young, phones already up, waiting. Waiting for the show to start. And before the lights come up, before he walks out, David, a voice fills the room. Not his voice. A girl's voice, soft, almost a whisper, saying something about a love that outlasts death. I loved you before I existed, and I'll love you even when I die. So don't leave me, please. The crowd hears poetry. It's an intro. It's the mood. The beat drops. Nobody thinks about it again. That recording reportedly played in the dark before David took the stage night after night on a tour that kept rolling through the summer and into the middle of September of 2025, months after prosecutors say Celeste Rivas Hernandez was already gone. Same voice, same room, same please don't leave me. And the people standing in those rooms singing along had no idea they might have been listening to a ghost. That's where I want to start today. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube as we get into this. The links, by the way, are in the description. The twisted cacophony of this story gets worse by the day. And there's a lot of dots being connected here. And we're going to discuss some of these theories, some of these thoughts that have been floating around online and trying to get a better understanding of where David, if he allegedly did all this, got the ideas that he did. Was anything here original, or is David like so many other killers or people who think they're prolific or think that they're deep or think that they're this or that? David Church seems to like to believe his own Kool-Aid, that he's, you know, this deep, profound artist, you know, all these, like, is he performing? Is he performing what he thinks people want? Because at the inside, he's about as empty as Brian Koberger. He's about as empty as the soul of this pen. There's nothing there. It writes, but you have to use it. You have to move it. This pen has no opinions. It's all about who's using it to write. And some people are like pens. Some people are like people. The pens are like pens, but some people are pens. and they have nothing that's going to come out of them other than mimicking something else. How much of the outside world was David mimicking because he didn't know how to act as a human being? That's a question I think we're going to ask here. It may sound a little deep, may sound a little out there, but trust me, it's something that we've seen in other cases, specifically Koberger. Koberger had a big fascination with American Psycho and other characters of that sort because he was so empty inside, didn't have personality, didn't have thoughts of his own. He had to mimic other things because that just wasn't there. So that's where I'm going to start. We're not going to start with the manga theory. You've probably seen that online, and we may touch on it a little bit, but not with the Amazon receipts. We're going to start with The Room and The Voice and the question that has been quietly eating at a lot of people who follow this case. How much of this man was real and how much of him was assembled out of borrowed darkness? If you've somehow missed this one, excuse me. Here's the floor and nothing more. David, D4VD, real name David Anthony Burke, 21 years old. He's a singer who got famous off a track literally called Romantic Homicide, a song that's been streamed more than a billion times. He's charged with the death with Celeste Rivas Hernandez, a 14-year-old girl whose remains were found in the front trunk of his Tesla after it was towed and a worker reported a smell. He's pled not guilty. Preliminary hearing is coming. The stage where a judge decides whether there's enough to send this to a jury, and there is. Prosecutors have laid out their case and court filings. I'm not going to march you through it line by line because the details are not the point, and Celeste deserves more than to be read aloud as a list of injuries. We've already done that. If you want to get all that information, it's in the feed if you want all of it. The point is what happened since her name got welded to that car. People have gone back through everything he ever made, every lyric, every video, every interlude, every half second of an old interview, and started reading all of it like a confession. A theory has taken hold online, and I want to actually talk about it today because it's bigger than the thing it looks like. Let's start with what isn't in dispute, because it is. His, and it is public, the breakout song, a homicide dressed up as a love song. A debut album is called Withered. The deluxe edition had planned, carried the subtitle, Macaire Sense. And if you don't know that word, Macaire Sense is the botanical term for dead leaves that refuse to fall off a branch. I didn't know it either. Leaves that die and cling. Anyway, he chose that. There's the monster project people are pulling apart frame by frame right now. There's the spoken word interlude built around a young girl's voice and a promise to love you after death. Lay all that on the table and step back. You're not looking one moody song. You're looking at a brand, a carefully assembled aesthetic of beautiful ruin, romantic decay, devotion that doesn't stop when the body does. Written, packaged, marketed, and sold mostly to teenagers. That part is not the theory. That is the catalog. That is the product and the people around him built. Now, here's a comparison that is currently driving the online conversation, and I want to handle this with some care because it's not nothing. People are reaching for Brian Koberger. At least I am a little bit. And the reason that one has some teeth has nothing to do with tabloids. When forensic examiners, the people who literally went through Koberger's phone and laptop, looked at what was on those devices, they drew a straight line to American Psycho. We did here. We were the first to do it. the vain mirror photos, the search history, the way he seemed to be performing a character for an audience of one. His own former cellmate told police his favorite movie was American Psycho. The morning after the murders, he dressed up very similar to the character in American Psycho, took that big selfie with the white-collared shirt, and went shopping. We looked at that morning when we found that photo and immediately put the dots together. People like this don't necessarily have a lot of their own thoughts. They're always grabbing from somewhere else because they're so empty on the inside. And sometimes they grab areas and they look at despicable characters in pop culture and for some reason connect with them. Maybe it's the emptiness. Prosecutors put one of those selfies into the court record. He was living out of fantasy idea, got real traction from us for a specific reason. The fantasy was tied to him. The artifacts that came off his own phone, out of his own mouth in a courtroom. That's a lens people are now trying to drop over here on David. And the argument, it runs like this. Maybe this is another one. Maybe here's another young man who didn't trip and fall into darkness, but studied it, curated it, built a whole identity out of other people's macabre stories. A manga here, a film there, a borrowed motif everywhere until the line between the character he was performing and the person he actually was just quietly dissolved. It's a serious idea. Forensic psychologists take the underlying question seriously because there is a real difference between someone who consumes dark fiction the way millions of perfectly ordinary people do, and someone who appears to be using it as a script, a place to rehearse, a costume to wear, a way to narrate himself into the story he finds flattering. The tell what investigators look for one is rarely the fiction itself. It's the pattern around it. Does the interest stay on the page, or does it start shaping how a person dresses, talks, photographs themselves, names his work, explains his own life back to himself? That's the line that matters, and it's a line you cannot draw from a hashtag. You draw it from evidence, from people who knew him, from the devices, from the timeline, the slow, unglamorous stuff that happens in a courtroom. And not in a comment section. And this is where I have to be straight with you, because this show does not let a good story outrun what's actually known. The manga or manja theory, depending on how you pronounce it. What is manja or manga? It's a version of Japanese animation. You can go deeper if you want to, but that's essentially what it is. And I've heard it mispronounced or pronounced 50 different ways to Tuesday, so it is what it is. If you're like, it's this, it's that, I don't really care. First time I've ever used it, hopefully one of the last. The claim that monster mirrors, a series called MPD Cycle, and there's a girlfriend's death storyline that he supposedly lifted, according to online theories, is, as of right now, entirely an internet product. It's not in a court filing, and I don't know that it really necessarily ever will be, or that it matters to be. Just like in the Koberger case, you had the connections there to Psycho, to American Psycho, to the online persona that seemed to be posting things only Koberger knew. And to this day, it's still unknown truly if it was actually him or if that's what his intent was. And we may never know, because these are the things that go on in people's brains. They're not necessarily to be litigated, but they're here for us to analyze on the outside, get a better understanding of what is making this psychopath tick. Now, no investigator has said that they found that Japanese cartoon on his device. The outlet that wrote it up says in plain language that there is no documented proof and no confirmation from anyone involved in either work that this was what inspired him. It started as a viral post and grew into a side-by-side screenshots and forum threads and a hashtag. So if you came here for me to tell you he left a confession in a comic book, I'm not going to do that because nobody credible has established that, and Celeste's case is far too serious to build on that and take it the stranger's hot take as fact. But you, really, knowing what David was into and what his actions were, it seems to make a little bit of sense. The thing I can't stop turning over, the actual reason I wanted to sit down and do this one is that the influence question cuts both ways, and almost nobody is asking it in the direction that matters. Let's start with the part most people felt and didn't say out loud, when that filing came out and people read that he had allegedly bought two chainsaws in an inflatable pool. A lot of them didn't react the way you react to something genuinely alien. They reacted the way you react to something that you've seen before, because they had to. Put in a show like The Blacklist, a hit network crime drama that millions of completely ordinary people watched on a weeknight with a bowl of cereal, and you'll find the cleanup, the containment, and the methodical disposal of a body staged as an hour of entertainment, but the commercial break dropped in the middle of it. Now, I'm not telling you he was copying anything. I have no idea what he watched, and nobody credible has tied him to a single frame of it, and this is an opinion, not a charge. That's not the unsettling part here. The unsettling part is that the rest of us had a shelf to put it on. The detail landed, and the real silence of the audience went quietly in their own heads. Oh, like that episode. There's an episode of The Blacklist. Two chainsaws. Pool. There's striking similarities with David and that cartoon. Inspiration? Direction? Just other pieces of macabre art in existence, and our minds are trying to draw connections because that's what we do as people? Or was David filling in his own empty spaces, his own empty blanks, with these dark pieces of art and then pressing go in his mind and living out a life and living out actions, mimicking things that he'd seen in Japanese cartoons or Blacklist or who knows what. And think about how strange this is. A 14-year-old girl is dead, and the method itself, to a lot of people, was not shocking, even though it was a shocking death. Why were some people not shocked by this? Because a screen spent years making them fluent in it. Did it make David fluent in it? Again, certain minds consume it. It's entertainment. It's a storyline. It's just that others view it as a guide. Did David view those sort of things as a guide because he was so immersed in his world of being this macabre, ironic artist with such deep thoughts for being a fucking 19-year-old? I mean, it's a lot of young, dumb people. We've all been there. I think they're a lot smarter and a lot profound than they actually are at that age. And it runs wider than any one crime drama. What does it say that a generation streamed Romantic Homicide more than a billion times and heard a love song? What does it say that he could put a deaf or a dead leaf metaphor on his album, a whispered girl's voice in the dark before every show, a project called Monster into the world, and the machinery around him, the label, the band partners, the algorithm, the playlist, and nothing ever flinched. He never flinched. It didn't flinch. It amplified. People ate it up. He ate it up while allegedly knowing what he did. We genuinely don't know yet whether he borrowed his darkness from somewhere what we can already see with no theory required is that the culture rewarded the darkness richly and steadily right up until the moment a 14-year-old girl was found in his car. And the very same instinct that made Romantic Homicide a billion stream hit is the instinct that has people right now treating her death like a puzzle box, comparing panels, decoding interludes, freezing a video to study a warped finger, swapping theories about whether he once searched for a different girl named Celeste. The case has generated its own genre. People are sleuthing it like a season they need to finish. And they reward each other for it. Likes, views, videos. Wait, go back, pause it there. Every new fragment becomes an episode. The girl at the center of it functionally is the cliffhanger. The Los Angeles police chief said something about this case that I do keep coming back to. He said some people treated this as if it were entertainment, and that it is not entertainment. It's a life taken in a brutal way. He was talking about the public, but the public did not invent that move on its own. It was taught. We spent years handing artists money and platforms and platinum plaques for making suffering beautiful and frictionless and easy to consume. And then we act surprised when the audience can no longer tell the difference between a crime and a finale. Or that the artist can't either. That's the influence that's going to be on trial. Not a Japanese comic. The entire pipeline that made this sort of death a viable career path. And the audience it quietly trained to read a real girl's killing like fan fiction with clues in it. Whether or not David was studying somebody else's nightmares, all of us have been marinating in the same one. And some got too comfortable in it. There's also a harder, colder reason that this matters, and it's not philosophical. A courtroom is about to weigh a real case with real evidence. Physical, digital, financial. And an influence narrative is exactly the kind of thing that gets weaponized in both directions. A prosecutor can wave a body of work in front of a jury and call it a window into intent. A defense team can put and point at the same songs and call them art, fiction, a persona, proof of nothing. Both of those moves are coming. And the more the internet inflates a theory, the easier it becomes for the actual sourced evidence to get lost in the noise, which is the one outcome that helps nobody who cared about Celeste. There was a real girl here, Celeste Rivas Hernandez, 14 years old. By the prosecution's own account, some of what was allegedly done afterward was meant to erase the simplest, most human thing about her, including prosecutors say the removal of a finger because it carried a tattoo of his name. Somebody allegedly tried to subtract her from her own death. And now online, a second kind of subtraction is underway. She's being turned into a footnote in a debate about his art, about his influences, about what he might have been reading or watching late at night. He gets to be the fascinating case study, the artist with the curated darkness, the next entry into the canon. She gets to be the plot device. And that bothers me. We may never get to the why. Tolberger carried his into his cell and never explained it. And a lot of families learn the brutal way that the confession you're waiting for sometimes simply never arrives. David has pled not guilty, and a court, not a forum, not a viral post, not me, is going to weigh the real evidence. Maybe we eventually learn what was on his devices and the influence question gets a real answer. Were his actions based on Japanese cartoons? Were they based on an episode of Blacklist? Where did these ideas and influence come from? If they weren't from the outside, or were they? Maybe we'll get answers, maybe we won't. But while the theories pile up, hold on to one thing. Whatever he was watching or reading or sampling, it did not end up in the trunk of that car. She did. The influence worth our attention was never the one that supposedly shaped him. It's the one we've all been swimming in, the one that taught a generation that a dead girl could be content. And the same ability to disconnect from reality, that she's a person, and then someone prioritizing their own needs, their own selfishness above that life. What was going on in the mind of David? Was he acting out based on other macabre pieces of entertainment that he's seen? Was he so connected to the persona he was trying to portray that it turned into something darker than anyone could imagine? I know it's kind of a deep thought, and it's a deep question, but I'm curious to get your thoughts in the comment section. We'll continue it right there. Links are in the description. Until then, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Memorial Day Sale and get 30% off paints and stains May 15th through the 28th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only, some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
Spring is sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details. Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.